A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Caliendo comes in. He's eligible. Here is Hunt for the touchdown. Kansas City remains unbeaten. 8-0.
This is so annoying. This is so annoying. They're so beatable looking, and yet no one can beat them. Chiefs beat the Bucks 30-24 in overtime last night. They're 8-0. DeAndre Hopkins looked good. He had two touchdown receptions. Travis Kelce looked good. And yet, here are the Bucks without Mike Evans, without Chris Godwin, with Sterling effing Shepard and some other randos actually making it a game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And yet, at the very end, these guys puss out. What is the deal? Why is the entire NFL seemingly too scared to beat the Kansas City Chiefs, who are certainly teasing us? They're showing us boobs. They're showing us junk. They are stripping all over the place because they know that no one's ever going to catch them. Like a slippery guy and Family Guy who's all greased up and running around the town. I don't get it. It's annoying. Someone needs to beat them, and yet no one can beat them, Joe George.
Yeah, scared money don't make money, Todd Bowles. What are you doing in that game? What are you doing, man? What are you doing?
For those who didn't watch, at the very end of regulation, Baker Mayfield and the Bucs somehow drive down the field, and they score a touchdown. They could kick the extra point or they could go for two. They choose to kick the extra point. Guess what happens? In overtime, Chiefs get the ball first, march down the field, and they score a touchdown. What's funny is Mahomes, right before the end of regulation, almost threw a couple of pick sixes back-to-back, but of course the Bucs aren't able to catch those two passes. And here's Todd Bowles after the game defending his decision to not go for two against the two-time defending champs, quarterbacked by Patrick Mahomes, who are 8-0.
You have communications upstairs about decisions, analytically, things of that nature. Did they advise you not to go for two? What was?
No, we went for one. We took our shots. We had our chances all game. We just lost the game. It didn't come down to that.
Josh Hayes had a tough assignment, you know, having to line up against DeAndre Hopkins a lot throughout the night. It was first done at All-Star. How do you think he did?
I mean, he did okay. I mean, the last drive, he gave up a couple tackles that he's got to make, but he was fighting. He was in there fighting.
Okay, soft Tampa Bay media not asking Todd Bowles a follow-up question of,
yeah.
What the F is that? Why didn't you go for two? We took our shots. You had a shot. You had a shot to kill him. You come at the king, you best not miss, right? Shoot him. Shoot him. Bam, bam, bam. Shoot him dead right there. You had a chance. God. Now I got this crap on the TV on ESPN. Would Patrick Mahomes be the GOAT if the Chiefs win their third straight title? All the Bucs needed to do was win to end the undefeated streak. That's all they needed to do. It was so close. Mahomes is not even playing well this year. And here we are once again, 8-0. And there's divine intervention happening for the Chiefs. They're getting away with false starts again.
Yep.
Oh, my God. It's so effing annoying. I suppose this is how everyone felt when the Patriots were doing this every single week. But They're inevitable.
I'll be honest with you, Paul. I think this is worse. Because at least Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, like, I don't feel like they ever played this bad. You obviously know better. But, like, to be this bad on offense for a year and a half, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They're going to go back to the Super Bowl this year. It doesn't matter what Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry do. They're going back to the Super Bowl.
The Kansas City
Chiefs are inevitable.
I do want to see that rematch, but I agree. And God, it's so annoying. I mean, we said it about the Astros, but the Chiefs really are inevitable. Here are the last eight games in which the Chiefs trailed at any point in the second half. You know what happened? Chiefs win. 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 Eight in a row. Don't let them win.
I got bad news for you, Paul. They might not lose this year. They might go 17-0. They play the Broncos, bad. The Bills always have their number. They play the Panthers, the Raiders, the Chargers, the Browns, Texans, Steelers, Broncos. That sounds like a team that's going to go 17-0 to me in the regular season. Like, they're better than everyone because their defense is incredible. And then what DeAndre Hopkins did in that game last night, finally playing with a Hall of Fame quarterback, 8 catches, 86 yards, 2 touchdowns, what he opened up for Travis Kelce. What they're getting out of Kareem Hunt makes no sense. He was out of the league. When he was in the league, he was barely playing. He was only in for Nick Chubb to give him a breather. Mm-hmm. And now he comes in 27 carries, 106 yeah. yards, and a touchdown.
It's
unbelievable.
They've replaced the Patriots. It drives me crazy. But they really have. This is exactly what we were seeing out of the Bill Belichick and Tom Brady Patriots not too long ago. And I hate seeing other teams do it. That's 100% what this is all about. But they had a chance. My God, go for it. You had an opportunity. And you, instead of saying, all right, we're going to give Patrick Mahomes one opportunity to get a game-winning field goal or a game-winning touchdown, they gave him two chances. They gave him a chance at the end of regulation to just win it. And they gave him a chance in overtime to win it because they didn't go for two. God, everyone plays so scared in the NFL, these defensive-minded coaches. And it does make me wonder, what would D'Amico Ryans have done in that situation? Would he have had the balls to go for two? I'd like to think that he would have, but then I took a look at where the Texans rank as far as fourth down attempts this year. They're 20th in the league. I also think about what they would have actually drawn up on that two-point conversion, and given what they did this year. What was the game? Was it against the Packers?
I think so.
Yeah.
Two-point conversion they went through, that was a total disaster.
Right, the one where two guys ran out for a route on a team that can't block for anybody.
I was picturing, imagining where Joe Mixon would throw it on a possible two-point conversion to win the game. Would he look for Stroud? Would he look for Stover? Mechie on the backside.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want Bobby Slowick calling two-point conversions. Like, we saw what he's been doing the last year and a half now, how bad it is on fourth and one, fourth and short, or just at a two-point conversion.
Take the keys away from him. Yeah,
yeah. Like, let's CJ Stroud call the place. Let's go backyard football here. I would hope D'Amico would go for it. It's the right decision to go for it. Because look what happened as soon as the toss was won by the Kansas City Chiefs. Baker Mayfield goes like this, lifts his head up, visible sigh on the field, because he knows that ball game is over because Patrick Mahomes is getting the football. Like, if your quarterback knows that, then he should be screaming at his head coach, don't give them the ball back in a tie game.
Listen,
it's stupid.
Baker Mayfield's right to have that reaction. I don't love that for my quarterback. If I'm on the sideline, if I'm the defender on the sideline and my quarterback just throws his head back when they lose the toss, I'm like, okay. Guess Baker doesn't think we have a chance, which, by the way, they didn't. But I just, come on, lift your guys up, Baker.
He did lift his guys up, though, as much as he could. I mean,
as much as he could.
No Mike Evans, no Chris Godwin. You think C.J. Stroud would have done that? No, he wouldn't have. He wouldn't have. I mean, based off what we've seen this year, he wouldn't have. No Nico Collins. What's been happening? Oh, nothing of value?
Oh, my God. I can't. Thank God we're not going to get the Chris Jones versus Kenyon Green matchup.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, whatever we get is probably going to be just as heinous.
It might be Kendrick Green.
And you have Za'Darius Smith officially on the Detroit Lions for Sunday night's football game. But we have not turned our attention to the Detroit Lions. I still feel like it is too soon to turn the page from that Thursday debacle. It was so embarrassing. It was so pathetic. And Baker Mayfield moving the football with this MacGyver offense against a very good Chiefs defense, seeing the Texans incapable of doing the same thing because of the offensive line problems that are massive problems. Oh.
Look what he got. They got 95 rushing yards, the Buccaneers. Their leading rusher was Bucky Irving, 7 carries for 24 yards.
Yeah, they had like 5 guys running.
Yeah, it took 5 guys to get 95 yards on 19 carries. They couldn't move it. 21 of those yards came from Sterling Shepard, a wide receiver.
They had a tackle playing center, and they still looked more effective on offense against a better defense than the Jets, than the Texans did against the Jets on Thursday. We have seen no trades as of yet. I think the only thing that the Texans have done as far as potential offensive line changes is working out Lyle Collins. They did that yesterday. Lyle Collins, you might know from the Cowboys, among other teams, as a guy who was going to be a first-round pick, and then some off-the-field stuff that was found out to not be true, that didn't even involve him. Really just a completely unfortunate circumstance for him. Leads to him being drafted, what, like the fourth round or something like that? Ultimately, by, of all teams, the Cincinnati Bengals. What a surprise. So you take a look at where the Texans are. They haven't done anything to address it. And I'm not going to lie, I'm in a little bit of a sour mood. Not as much about the Chiefs, but because of some of the stuff that D'Amico Ryans said at his press conference today. So here's the question. Do we want to talk about Alex Bregman getting a qualifying offer next? Or do you want to hear what D'Amico Ryans had to say that annoyed me? Do we want the vibes to go up, or do we want more angry Paul?
Can I ask you a question first?
Yes.
Are we sure we talk about Alex Bregman, the vibes are going up?
Well, he got a qualifying offer.
Okay.
And he has until November 19th. The Astros even put out a tweet with like a hard line in the sand. The deadline to sign is Ned. Okay, dude.
You know what?
Whoever put that tweet out there should not have done that.
I'm liking the vibe of angry Paul today.
You are?
So let's get...
I just want to... Let's eat our vegetables.
Yeah.
And like, let's try to have a good 2.5 hours after the D'Amico Ryan segment.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, get it all out.
Let's get it all out.
Turn the page.
Okay. Rocky comments on YouTube. Paul sucks. Why is ESPN not canned this dude? Everyone else has. You should learn how to spell. So I did the spelling there for him. It's a great question because I'm so pissed today. I probably will get fired. So here's what we're going to do. You're going to hear from D'Amico Ryans, who is just deflecting blame more and more and more. D'Amico Ryans is providing more protection than this effing offensive line. You'll hear him next. Stay put.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
We'll see who steps up at the offensive line position. We'll see who steps up, see how we go out there and get the job done.
What if it's nobody?
Well, then they'll see who steps up next week. Because that's what he keeps saying. See who steps up, Paul.
People are trying to keep the Mount Gallant going. The dragon has been unleashed. Someone said, this isn't Paul. This is his evil twin Wall because he's got a mustache going on. Somebody texted in, the Kansas City dynasty is greater than the New England dynasty. Not even close. I'd fight you based off of math because 6 is more than 3. But let's focus on what has me in a bad mood today. So I watched D'Amico Ryan's press conference yesterday. And look, I do understand that D'Amico Ryan's is always going to defend his guys. But the offensive line for this team sucks right now. It sucks. It is $188 million that is being lit on fire. Like it's the Joker at the end of The Dark Knight. That is what it is. And yet, whenever asked about it, D'Amico, he will redirect the conversation. So here is a sequence that I've supercut of D'Amico Ryans shifting from talking about the offensive line as a whole to talking about everybody.
We all have to play better. Every position, you know, we all have to play better. It's not one position. Everybody has to play better for us to win games. You know, going forward, it's everybody playing better. But as of right now, again, everybody has to play, but it's everybody working together. It's an entire offense working together, right? It's never just one thing, right? And I know it's easy to point the finger at one thing. It's never just one thing. It's all 11 guys working together, being in sync. I talk about everybody playing better. It's everybody. It's the quarterbacks, the tight ends, it's the receivers, our entire offense, right? Our entire defense, our special teams unit. That's where I'm at. We can hone in on different spots and all those. It doesn't matter. Each position, no matter what it is, from top to the bottom, we all play better, we'll be in position to win games.
It's on everybody. It's not on the offensive line, except for it's obviously on the offensive line. Who else has been a problem? Really? I mean, yes, the coverage in the second half against the Jets was not ideal, but the defense did enough in the first half to give the Texans offense a chance to win. It's the offensive line every single week. On top of that, it's Bobby Slowick, and you can talk about how they're good in run blocking and how they have good pass protection reps. Every player who has made it to the NFL level is capable of having good reps, especially if you're playing in a game where you're on the field for, what, like 90 snaps or so?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like every single time I hear from D'Amico Ryans, I'm only going to get more and more annoyed. And I get it. Again, he is defending his guys and he is saying it's on all of us. But if you're in that locker room and you are watching the film, how can you be focusing on anything other than the offensive line that is making it completely impossible for your all-world quarterback to do anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's so clear like that's the problem. And you're right. He's trying to deflect blame on everyone. CJ Stroud is trying to deflect blame onto himself. But the stats are that C.J. Stroud has been sacked 30 times this year. The only quarterback who's been sacked more times in the NFL this season is Deshaun Watson, who's been sacked 33 times this season. So C.J. is getting hit way too many times. You cannot have a quarterback be sacked 30 times and be a good football team. Because think, look what's around you. The quarterback, they're in the top five teams of getting sacked. You have Deshaun Watson and the Browns. They're terrible. Then you have C.J. Stroud. You have Caleb Williams and the Bears. They're terrible. You have Geno Smith and the Seahawks. They're meh, but mostly bad. And then you have Daniel Jones and the Giants. Like, that's what you are. You are in the bottom five right now in protecting your quarterback in the NFL. And the fact that you're 6-3 is a miracle. So keep telling us it's going to get better. But I don't believe him. Because they're not going to do anything. They're going to roll out Kendrick Green or one of these practice squad guys. Or maybe it is Lyle Collins, who's been out of the league now for like a year plus, I think, at this point. I mean, he was barely, like, I think he got benched a couple times when he was in Dallas in his last stint there. So, like, you're bringing in scrubs. No offense to these guys.
At least Collins has been good, though.
Before. Yeah, yes, Collins has actual snaps in the NFL.
Well, Collins has been a good player, too. Collins once was a very good guard.
For sure. Just been a little bit. But yeah. He's probably better than what you have now. So, now he hasn't been signed yet, which I find interesting. But so maybe they don't agree with that assessment anymore. But they're just going to roll out Kendrick Green on Sunday. That's what I'm prepared for.
They have 2 hours and 36 minutes or so to make a trade to bring somebody in, but we have seen nothing. Meanwhile, we also heard from some Texans players yesterday. Here is Texans right tackle Titus Howard weighing in on the criticism, fair criticism, from that's been levied upon the Texans offensive line. This is from Chancellor Johnson of Channel 2.
I take it to heart, man. I mean, it's always like, whether we winning or losing. As an O-lineman, you know, when you got a quarterback like CJ, you know, we got to be at our best at all times. And so, you know, we see everybody, where everybody talk, we just got to be better. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we do our job. They won't be talking about us no more. So, I mean, that's a crazy thing about the O-line, just do your job. You do your job, they don't talk about you. You don't do your job, you're going to hear it. So we got to just step up to the challenge and go out there and do our job. There's no, I mean, everybody got a reason to say something right now. But we just got to put out, you know, listen to it, on what we got to do as individuals first and see what we can do as a group to fix it.
He is right. I mean, they just have to hunker down and they have to ignore all the outside noise. I would just say, though, that it's a little annoying to hear that Titus Howard's basically saying, well, you know what? If we do our job, then we won't hear the noise anymore. You know, what? That's the incentive? The incentive isn't to do your job well? That's at least what I hear when I say that. And again, you can always turn words that somebody says, especially when you're annoyed with their unit, and take them whatever way you want to. And maybe I'm doing a little bit of that right here. All I'm saying is that they are the clear problem. And it seems like at the very least, Titus is acknowledging that, as opposed to D'Amico Ryans, who is saying it's on all of us. It's not on all of us, guys. It is really on just one part of the team, a part of the team that they probably should have had an idea could go this poorly this year. Maybe not in the case of Juice Scruggs, but in the case of Kenyon Green, yes. And what did they do this offseason to give themselves some sort of a backup plan? Nothing. They didn't do anything in the draft. They drafted a swing tackle. And they did not go after anybody in free agency on the interior.
A swing tackle who doesn't have a ton of reps in college, and like they probably don't want to put him out there right now, honestly. Because if they also felt comfortable with Blake Fisher, I don't know why they wouldn't just make the Titus Howard move to left guard right now. I do appreciate that. I do think he's wrong at this point, because the offensive line is so bad that if they actually are competent on Sunday Night Football against the Detroit Lions, I think we will be singing their praises on Monday. If C.J. Stroud goes against the Lions, who are without Aiden Hutchinson, they've ramped it up. They're blitzing like crazy. Like, that's how they're replacing Aiden Hutchinson. So if C.J. Stroud doesn't get murdered on Sunday night, you're wrong, Titus. We'll be praising you on Monday morning. We'll be talking about all the great things that you guys did because the quarterback survived and maybe you won a football game because you actually gave him a chance to throw a football instead of just lay on his back half the game. They're not going to trade for an offensive lineman today. I didn't know this. Jason Bristol, shout out to him. Friend of the show, I would say at this point, for all of us. He tweeted this thread out yesterday, and it ended with, in 5 seasons, there's been 4 offensive linemen traded in the months of either October or November in the NFL. So 4 guys in the last 5 years. So kind of feel like we're not going to see that left guard trade today for the Texans. I assumed the number was higher than that. 4 and 5 years is.
I would have thought more than less than one a year.
Yeah.
I would have thought that we've gotten to one a year.
Yeah. But at a minimum.
That I knew it was infrequent, but I didn't know it was that infrequent. Yeah. I don't expect anything from the Texans today.
Commanders are making moves. They got Marshawn Lattimore from the Saints. Great Lions move. Are making moves. They got Za'Darius Smith.
Cowboys are making Browns. Moves.
Yeah, someone texted, talk about Minga. No, who cares? You guys are screwed.
He has I think, 15 catches this season. Good trade. Sounds like a fourth-round pick.
Steelers just made a move. They just traded for Mike Williams, so Aaron Rodgers got him out of the New York Jets locker room real quick. So
it's going to be a big 4 games that he plays for the Steelers.
The Cowboys traded for not Barkevious Mingo? Because that's what I said.
I had the same thought.
She
I was like,
for a complete nobody. Okay, cool. Nothing against Jonathan Mingo, right?
Yeah, Jonathan Mingo.
Yeah, at least I got that right. All right, it's out of my system. They have to play better, and they should have done something to make things better. We'll see if they do something by the trade deadline. It is Gallant and George. He is Joe. I am Paul. Sean behind the glass. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. You can join us on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join us on Twitch at ESPN 975. I agree, grinding on coffee and whiskey. D'Amico is starting to get a little frustrating to listen to be honest. That is an understatement at this moment in time. Up next, our college football six-pack. Yeah, A&M biffed it. They did. Are they going to be able to bounce back? What are you expecting out of the college football playoff rankings that come out later today as well? Stick around. We go through everything that you need to know from the college football weekend next in our college football six-pack. Stay put.
In 1930, the Republican-controlled House of Representatives, in an effort to
alleviate
the effects of
time to put down the books and crack open a college football six-pack.
We're going streaking through the quad and into the gymnasium. Come on, everybody!
With Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Let's do it.
All right, everything that went down in college football this past weekend, let's go through it. Texas A&M biffed the bed. 44-20, losing to South Carolina. About as classic Aggies as it gets. I feel for the Aggies out there because I was feeling the Marcel Reed hype train, but yikes. They struggled on offense. It did seem at halftime like there was a chance that they would figure things out in the second half. It was a tie game, 20-20, but the Aggies could not tackle all game long, though.
Honestly, I thought there might be a quarterback change at halftime. I thought, like, just the way Elko's been doing this thing all year, kind of going back and forth and misdirection, I thought we might see that quarterback change. But, yeah, I mean, they couldn't tackle. They gave up 286 rushing yards. That's not going to cut it.
No.
That's not good.
No.
Especially against the South Carolina team that all they want to do is run the ball. They really don't want to throw it that much. Or if they do throw it, they're only taking deep shots to their tight end, Simon, I think was his last name. It's a game where, like you said, Paul, it's pretty – this is kind of what Aggie fans have seen for a while now.
Yeah, you just when you feel like everything.
It's the opposite of right when they. Oh, no, it is. Right when they pull me back in.
Right when they pull you back in, they kick you out.
Yeah, they then chop off your head.
So, next 3 games for the Aggies to close out the regular season at 7-2, New Mexico State at Auburn, and then the season finale on the 30th against Texas.
The season's not over.
Yeah. Take care of business against Auburn. I'm not even entertaining a New Mexico loss. But take care of business against Auburn, and you have a game to make the playoff against your hated rival.
Other big games in college football over the weekend. Ohio State beat Penn State 20-13. It wasn't really that close. I never felt like Penn State had a chance.
Ohio State spotted them a 10-point or a 10-0 lead.
I know.
Like, they just spotted them 10 points.
Because Will Howard had a terrible pick six.
That was so bad.
Will Howard, he got it together enough. But, I was not enthused by what I saw.
Will Howard and Carson Beck. Not great weekends for those two.
Carson Beck sucks.
Oh, I thought Florida had a chance against Georgia. Yeah, and I'm
tied in the fourth quarter.
I'm a Gator fan, and I was like, they're going to blow it. I kept on saying, they're going to blow it. 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 They did blow it eventually.
The field goal was rough. The field goal snap.
God, the missed snap.
That's
right.
Like the second where I was like, oh, Georgia won.
So Georgia beat Florida 34-20, but it was a very underwhelming game. Carson Beck threw three picks. Going back to the Ohio State-Penn State game, there's a lot of talk about Jason Kelce walking into the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
But how about James Franklin after the game? James Franklin got into it with a fan, and I don't know what the fan said to him. I watched a bunch of angles of this, but Franklin told the fan, if you're going to be man enough to talk, what's your name? The fan turned around and walked towards the exits as soon as Franklin did that.
What a soft boy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I'd want to give my name to the head coach of a college football program that, once covered up child rape. So I know it's different people in charge, but that program...
You never know.
That program generally gives a lot of power to the head coach. So just a thought.
I probably would have said Bofa. I think I would have hit him with a butt. I would no way I'd give my real name.
That's probably.
But yeah, no bad look for James Franklin to be going back. I mean, I compared it to the "you suck too" moment
with Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, former Penn State head coach Bill O'Brien.
Or many Nick Sirianni moments.
Yes, two guys that you famously want to model your not just coaching because they're both decent coaches, but your PR.
Right.
They both struggled with the PR side of coaching and being a college coach. That's a huge part, especially if you're James Franklin and you never beat Ohio State. You need some great PR to recover from that, and this was not it.
Rest of the big games across the sport, Oregon beat Michigan 38-17. No surprise there. Miami smokes Duke 53-31. No surprise there. Tennessee hung on to beat a pretty bad Kentucky team, 28-18. A little closer than that final score indicates. Texas Tech gave Iowa State their first loss, 23-22. Wreck 'em. How about that? And you also saw Clemson go down to Louisville, 33-21. Plus our beloved Cougs, they took down Kansas State. 24-19.
That was a big win.
That was a good win for them.
And a great growl, by the way. I don't want that to pass by.
Blackout, baby.
Yeah, it was a great win. Caught the tail end of that. Okay. Zion Chris only was... he was 11 for 11, but he only attempted 11 passes. I think they might got something with Chris.
I think
there's something there with them. Obviously, Willie Fritz, great coach. So, of course, this team is going to go from being shut out in their first two conference games to beating Utah, who's injured, but whatever. And then a playoff-caliber team with Kansas State. Yeah, big one. Also very funny that this game was delayed, and then they resumed it, played, finished at 6 o'clock. Rice was playing, 5 miles away? And their game didn't start until 8 p.m. Mm. I don't know what the procedures there, the difference in procedures. But I just thought that was funny that they had to sit there and watch UH play in the same city that they're playing.
And Houston Blue uniforms come back on the 23rd.
Momentum.
For all teams. They're wearing for all sports.
Let's go.
Like wow.
The basketball jerseys are going to go insane.
I haven't seen
those
yet.
They're going to sell so many of them.
But they actually sell them, though. That's the problem.
They are. They actually are. They said they made a deal with Nike, so okay. It's like in the stores. They did a big reveal.
Yeah, they changed up the – like there's no stripes on the – shoulder pads and there's no or on the shoulders of the uniforms and no stripe on the helmet, so it looks a little bit less like that's the Houston Oilers,
right?
But it still gives you the same vibe.
The other two interesting games as far as newcomers to the college football playoff in the weekend, first off, Indiana is 9-0. They beat Michigan State 47-10. Wow. And SMU is now 13. They smoked Pitt 48-25. Pitt was unbeaten at the time. So it's the highest they've been ranked since they were number 3 in 1985, which was 2 years before they got the death penalty. The Ponies are so back. NIL. Throwing money blindly at things. SMU was waiting for this day for so long. And 40 years later, they finally get the chance to just throw money at their problems. Much like all the students that go to that school have their parents do for them.
I just love that we're going to get like SMU Miami in the ACC championship game. And this, of all the weird things, like Oregon's going to play in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah.
Maybe Texas will play in the SEC championship game, but then SMU representing the ACC to go to the college football playoff.
There's a chance that all the newcomers win their you rolled through it.
Yeah, Oregon, Texas, SMU.
And then Colorado can win the Big 12. Although they're not, asterisk, newcomer. They were a Big 12 school, and then they left and came back. But, yeah, it is interesting. SMU, hey, sometimes it's worth every penny.
And BYU, right? They're new to the
BYU.
Big 12,
also,
they?
Number 9.
Last year, though.
Was that last year?
Yeah. Oh, okay. They came in with Houston.
Some funny coach moments. We already talked about James Franklin. Hey, remember Tom Herman? He used to be the coach of the Cougs.
Yep.
He used to be the coach of the Texas Longhorns. And now he is the coach at Florida Atlantic University. He got mad at South Florida's Alex Golish, who is a friend of the program. We enjoy him. After the Bulls went for two, up 44-21. 100% a retaliatory move for Tom Herman, going on sides up 56-14 against South Florida. Last year, after the game, Alex Golish just walked off the field, not looking for a handshake from Tom Herman. Tom Herman, who is very sensitive, did not take kindly to this and angrily followed him around trying to force a handshake. All-time moment, Tom Herman remains soft.
I mean, there was a handshake.
It was a forced handshake.
It was the, blow-by. Don't even break stride, don't look at him handshake.
It's a bad look for Tom Herman, going to be honest.
It is. He got the medicine he dished out last year.
It's also tough that this moment makes me think, I wonder how Tom Herman's doing at FAU. And then I see how he's doing at FAU. That's a worse look. They're...
What are they?
2-6.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That's not great.
Well, how do you go from, the coach at Texas to 2-6 at FAU? We all thought you were a good coach at one point.
P-scales.
Oh, maybe he left it behind?
Yeah.
Yeah?
The players at NIL era said, we're not doing that.
Yeah, it's what, South Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Florida Atlantic's in South Florida.
Need to hydrate down there.
Boca Raton?
Yeah.
Isn't that where it's at?
Need to hydrate. Speaking of 2-6 teams, Mike Gundy had a funny quote after Oklahoma State's sixth straight loss. What's important for all the Oklahoma State fans to know is that we're very aware of what's going on. At some point in life, we ought to put trust into somebody. And I think they need to trust that we have a good plan for what's going on here in the big picture. And we have answers. Sometimes they're not short-term. Sometimes they might be long-term answers. Kind of the synopsis of all this is that this place has had tremendous success for 18 and a half years or 19. I can't do the math real good. Unfortunately, in life, most people are weak. And as soon as things start to not go as good as what they thought, they fall apart and they panic. And then they want to point the finger and blame other people. You see it happen in everyday life. People do it all the time. That's why I refuse to watch the TV and watch the news, because I get tired of people complaining and bitching about this and that versus doing something about it and trying to figure out a way to make it better. That is Mike Gundy. I'm a man. I'm 55 now.
At least 55.
Yeah.
Yeah. 55 now. Just can't let that.
Hair looks good still.
It does. I'm not convinced it's real. It looks so good.
Oh, you think
good.
It's like Andre Agassi?
It looks so good still. I'm like, I have my doubts.
Okay.
He's a man. He's 57.
57?
That was 17 years ago.
Man.
They're terrible.
This is the worst they've looked ever. He is right. They've had a lot of success. But if you have a year like this where you lose six in a row in a down Big 12, are you going to stick around?
Yeah, that's the thing. Him talking about – and he's been by far the most successful coach in their history. This seems – once you start talking about, society today as a coach – having this bad of a year makes me think he's on Tony Bennett quit watch. Or maybe retirement or whatever. But I don't know how much longer Mike Gundy's going to be around.
Yeah.
Coaching the team.
Because I don't really know what's next for him. This older generation of coaches that seems to be struggling in the NIL era, feels like they either retire and they go to TV or they end up with some nondescript job. I know, friend of the station, Dana Holgerson, just got hired today. I think a consultant for Nebraska. So it's
Gary Patterson was a consultant for Texas. I think he's a consultant for Baylor, weirdly enough, now.
Yeah.
There are these kind of coaches that they don't want to be still in the game, or maybe the game doesn't want them anymore. And I mean, for a guy like Gundy, who's coached as alma mater for almost 20 years now, it's hard to be now I'm going to restart after in Boca Raton after they fire Tom Herman. Like, that's just not going to – that's not – I don't think that's going to happen.
That is a retirement community.
It so is a retirement community.
It would make the most –
it is. And it's also
it would make sense for Mike Gundy.
Very Mike Gundy type of place, too.
Yeah.
The AP Top 25, want to go through the top 10 real quick. Oregon is a unanimous number one. Georgia's still number two. I don't get that. Number three, Ohio State. I would put Ohio State over Georgia right now.
Yeah, they lost to Oregon at the last second in Oregon.
Yeah.
That is theoretically their even team.
Right. Number four, Miami, ahead of number five, Texas. It's the Georgia loss, but
yeah,
I think Texas is better than Miami. Penn State, number six. Tennessee, seven. Indiana, eight. BYU, nine. Notre Dame, number 10, Joe.
There we go. Drop two spots on a bye week. Love it. lost the bye week.
Wait, you dropped two spots, and was it to Indiana and BYU?
Yeah. No, yes.
I don't think anyone else passed.
They moved from 8 to 10.
Oh, okay.
So BYU didn't move. Indiana just jumped it.
Okay, gotcha.
College football playoff rankings are going to be released at 6 tonight on ESPN. Biggest thing happening tonight. Expecting any surprises? What's the most troll-a-lol move that can be done? Notre Dame number 4. That's the answer.
Oh, they can't be.
It would be funny if they did that, though.
Boise State number 4 as the fourth automatic bid and team that gets the bye over BYU.
I think now that they've expanded it, though, I have a hard time imagining them doing the crazy thing with the mid-major school.
Well, I mean, a conference winner gets the fourth bye seed automatically. So, like, do you like BYU more or do you like Boise State more?
BYU.
I think it's BYU, but you have Ashton Jeanty, like, top two in Heisman right now, so maybe.
BYU has a great win against SMU. SMU's only loss of the season is to BYU, so.
That's going to be hard to pass.
Yeah. I think the surprise would be, like, Indiana being ahead of, like, Miami. Something like that. Like, putting Miami 6th and Indiana 5th, that would be a big.
What if they put Indiana ahead of Ohio State?
Hey, one team's undefeated, one team's not.
Exactly.
Paul, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I actually am curious, like, how they...
You gotta put the undefeated teams in there.
You gotta respect the undefeated slate.
Like, are they gonna reveal this? Because the winner of the conference automatically gets the bye. Are they gonna go based off standings?
I would think so.
Because then based off standings, then Indiana, as of right now, if you look at the Big Ten standings... They're in first place in the Big Ten right now.
So it would be like Oregon, Indiana, Miami, BYU.
It would be Indiana.
That would be really fun.
No, because Oregon's in the Big Ten.
Yeah, but I would say that I bet they give it to, well, so the top four are conference
winners.
Yeah. Okay.
But what I think is that they'll just rank them.
Based on who they think's going to win?
They'll just rank them on who's the best team. So they'll have two Big Ten teams in the top three.
Okay.
And then when... someone actually wins the whatever, the Big 12, they'll just then put them at the four seed.
So you don't think they're going to like do it like in the formula? So sure on TV, ESPN
will throw the rankings into a bracket, but I think the committee will just lay out a ranking of
1 through 25, and then ESPN will plug it in. That makes more sense, probably, than to try to actually do it a different way.
He's Joe, Sean behind the glass. That's a college football six-pack every single Tuesday at 12:30. We go through what went down in the weekend of college football. We'll see what those college football playoff rankings are later tonight. D'Amico Ryans annoyed me with something he said yesterday, but one Houston Rocket may have annoyed me even more. And I imagine a lot of Rockets fans would agree with me. You will hear what this Rocket had to say after a Rockets win over the New York Knicks. Stay put.
We're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Rockets didn't really have that good of a game last night, and yet they won by a score that looks more convincing than it was. 109-97 over the supposedly, for real this time, New York Knicks, who are always a bunch of bum-ass frauds. Let's add Karl Anthony Towns to the mix. You're still going to be the Celtics bitch. Whatever, it's fine. I'm going to bring back to the Houston Rockets. Did you know that if the season ended today, they'd be the 4 seed in the Western Conference?
Let's go.
4-3, baby.
Cancel the season.
Yeah, I saw Jackson Gatlin tweet out, call the season right now. I'm game for that.
Yeah.
4-3 being the 4 seed.
Let's get to the playoffs.
Super Sim. Let's do it.
I mean, if the season ended today, like, there'd be some... I know at some point we'll be doing Giannis watch. They've got, what, one win this season? Mm-hmm. They're terrible.
We will be doing Giannis watch probably later in the week.
But, like, there's a lot of bad, like, good teams in the NBA that have, like, one or two wins this year. So let's just start it now.
Thunder are 7-0. Phoenix 5-1. I think we buy into those two teams. Golden State 6-1 is surprising.
3-0 without Steph Curry.
That is even more surprising.
I kind of like what they did this offseason to replace Klay. Like, they added shooting around him.
Oh, just letting him walk.
Yeah, like, just, like, letting Klay go and then just, like, bringing in a bunch of shooters to, like, to put around Steph.
Yeah, Buddy Hield. It's like they kind of just moneyballed the we're replacing Klay Thompson with three different players that all kind of do what Klay Thompson does.
We saw in the game they played on Saturday, like, Kuminga's pretty good.
Kuminga's all right.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Pods. I like pods.
Let's start with the good. Alperen Şengün, who got benched on Saturday, he was great. He answered the call. He had 25 points, 15 boards, 5 assists, and 4 blocks. Here's Ime Udoka talking about Şengün after the game.
Alperen is going to bounce back eventually. I mean, he, you know, we had a good talk today about, you know, ways so he can impact the game and ways I can help him as well as him help himself out there. And so, favorable matchup in our opinion to go through him quite a bit tonight. And, you know, he played excellent. I mean, other than, you know, I think the pace and got a little winded in the fourth when it was up and down. He played a long stretch there. A few guys were getting after it there. So, you know, not just him, but I thought he had a phenomenal game and stuffed the stat sheet across the board and, you know, took on the challenge at both ends.
He responds to pressure. He responds to getting benched. All the Turkish Rockets fans out there, y'all need to chill, okay? When he has a bad night or when he's doing something Udoka doesn't like, he's going to bench him. Who knows more about basketball?
The Turks?
Udoka or a bunch of Turkish people who believe that this guy is effing LeBron? Probably Udoka. Just wanted to lay that out there. But it was a nice bounce back game for Şengün. Not so much for Jalen Green. I see Todd the Show is ranting about him in our Twitch chat. He did have 15 points, 5 for 15 from the field, 2 for 8 from outside. I guess he hit those two threes in the fourth quarter. Live by the sword, die by the sword. He is a 3-point shooter first now, it seems. And I don't like it, but this is what basketball is in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, his last two games are obviously not his best, but, like, so far through 7 games, it's early. He's still shooting 37% from the 3-point line this season. So, I mean, the biggest thing for him is just don't be reckless with it when it's not going in. Mm-hmm. Give it to Şengün. You know, pass the ball to Fred VanVleet. Like, when other guys are making the shots, don't be selfish. Like, that's the biggest thing for Jalen Green. Is it's okay if it doesn't work, but don't just jack them up relentlessly. If you're not having a good night.
And at so far at this point this season, and last night was different. I mean, it was really the only game where this is true. I mean, you said pass the ball to Şengün or Fred VanVleet. Well, in most of these crunch times, Şengün hasn't been on the court, and Fred VanVleet has been shooting 1 for 11. A lot of times it is like, Jalen Green, I don't care that you're having a bad night. You're going to have to make it happen.
Well, interestingly, you bring up Fred VanVleet because this comment, I think, will drive more people crazy than D'Amico Ryan's talking about how it's on everybody for the offensive line. Here is Fred VanVleet. He doesn't care what you think if he's taking too many shots.
Yeah, I just shoot it. I don't really care. I shoot it anytime, 0 for 20, 20 for 20. Like, I'm shooting it. I play every game like it's my last. I play to win. I don't play for Twitter. I don't play for stats. I play to win every game. And, you know, some people love it. Some people hate it. But I play the game to win. And
excuse me, sir. Everyone hates 0 for 20. There's not one person in the world who would ever want to see 0 for 20. I don't need that hyperbole in that comment. Especially considering he was 1 for 5 from outside last night in a game where he did shoot 8 for 14 from the field.
And the one that he made was from, like, China. Like, it was so far back.
From Missouri City. Shout out to Bill Rohr. But, yeah, I mean, hey, do you like wins? Stats are for losers. Fred VanVleet, also Bill Belichick.
0 for 20 is a really bad stat. I don't.
Luckily, he hasn't gone 0 for 20 yet, but it hasn't been that far.
He was pretty close the other night, wasn't he?
That's the issue. He couldn't have said, like, I don't care if I'm going 1 for 10. It's like, you have gone 1 for 10.
You've gone, so, like, clearly, you don't care.
You've gone, like, 1 for 15. Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately kind of a good you know, I guess, motto to live by, especially if you are going to have to be one of the guys on this team.
Like, I get it.
Shoot your way out of the slump.
I really don't like this team's three-point shooting. They're 8 for 33 from outside. They still won this game by 12, incredibly.
Yeah, and 33, that's lower than their season average.
Yeah, you know what?
They average like 38.
On a night where you're off, at least they stopped taking as many.
And let me pull up their points in the paint. It felt like they were just scoring. They're getting a layup literally every time they wanted to when Karl Towns was on the court.
They got 62 points in the paint last night.
Yeah, I mean... That's how. So a lot of people were saying, "How did they win when they shot 24% from three? Because you score 60 points in the paint. How you win."
But the thing is, that's what the Rockets should be doing. Like, I know they want to shoot the 3-point line. I'm annoyed with you, Paul. Like, of how much they shoot it sometimes. But they have so many guys.
Annoyed with what they shoot, not annoyed.
Yeah,
with me.
Okay, yeah. Good. But like they have so many guys that like this is what they're great at already. Shingun's good in the paint. We saw Amen Thompson last night. That fake pass. And then, like, bouncing it, dunk was electric from Amen Thompson.
A crazy play. And it was something he had to do because he was catching the ball between Bridges and Anunoby, two really good defenders. So he passed fakes to the corner to Fred VanVleet. Bridges, I guess, hasn't looked at the scouting report recently. It's like, hey, maybe you don't need to close out that hard on Fred VanVleet. Anyway, the pass fake freezes him, dunks it on or close to Anunoby. Great play.
I mean, you have that. Like you have those two guys. Tari Eason's good at attacking the bucket.
Yeah.
Jabari Smith at times can be good at attacking the bucket. Not loving what he's doing this season. Jalen can attack the bucket really well. Like just
yeah.
Zag. Zag.
I was interested in, and this is maybe just like it's kind of what I've been muttering to myself the first five games of the season, and then Ime finally does it. I'm like, great idea. And they win. So I'm right. I get to be right. I know more ball than you, Ime Udoka. I'm a Turkish Rocket fan in my heart. But closing the game with Eason and Thompson instead of Smith and Brooks, I don't know if that's an every night thing. Obviously, you're going to have to ride the hot hand, and you are sacrificing some shooting by doing that. But just how much energy these guys are playing with, especially the last two games, with Eason and Thompson basically being the focal point of their comeback against the Warriors. And obviously, we talked about what Thompson was doing, not just on offense, but also guarding Brunson on defense. Like, I kind of like that as the closing lineup with those two guys, those two closing wings instead of Jabari and Brooks. Maybe it depends on the matchup. If you're playing a more bigger offensive guard, if you're playing like LeBron or something, well, funny one to pull out, but if you want Brooks to guard him, maybe you don't, but if you want that kind of body on him. But I think on a night like last night, that was the right lineup to go to.
It'll be interesting to see if that is something that they go to more as the season progresses. Sean behind the glass, Joe to my right, Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5. And 92.5. Coming up next, are the Houston Texans going to make a move to upgrade their offensive line by today's 3 p.m. NFL trade deadline? You will hear what D'Amico had to say on that yesterday next. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5.